Hello, I'm Kyle Willoughby. Joining me is Claire White.
Hello.
And this is Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, a Nerd Manual. We are here to discuss new nerd creations, how they were made, and explore the roots of the characters and the stories. Today we are talking about Sid Meier's Civilization VI. It's the other game that is ruining my relationship.
This one might be ruining mine too.
It's ruining everyone's relationship out there. Civilization VI is a video game. It was developed by Firaxis Games. It was released on October 21st, 2016. And as the name implies, obviously, it's a sixth game in the Civilization franchise.
I thought you were going to say it's a civilization.
It's a whole civilization in itself. No, it's a turn-based video game in which the player leads a civilization from infancy and tries to achieve one of numerous victory conditions. They try to win, but you can win in a bunch of different ways. Proving that your civilization is the greatest civilization. Victory conditions include military power, conquering all your enemies, specifically taking all their capital cities. Technological superiority, where in Civilization VI, your goal is to get a colony on Mars. In other civilization games, it was to get a colony established on Alpha Centauri, or a rocket sent to Alpha Centauri at the very least. You can achieve victory through cultural influence, getting all the other civilizations to wear your jeans and listen to your dirty rock and roll music. And this is actually the first game to include victory through religion, where you can convert all the other civilizations to your religion and you win. So it's not just about, like, blood and guts and conquering people, which is cool.
Unless you want it to be.
Unless you want it to be. Some of us want it to be. Claire will be talking about the history of civilization, which is a pretty daunting topic, I think.
It's pretty
dense.
Great.
It's going to be great.
Nah. Very specific.
She got this.
Ten minutes. Here I go.
And I'll be talking about the development of the franchise and about Sid Meier, the guy whose name adorns all these Civilization games. So, Claire, why don't you take it away?
So I'm going to start this off with a disclaimer, which I think is always a great way to start off any kind of podcast.
Spoilers ahead? Is that what it is?
Yeah, spoilers about Civilization. So when I started researching this, I actually started researching board games because that's what Civ is based off of. But Civ is short for Civilization, the video game. And then I got so bored doing that research, and so I was thinking about what I really love about this game because, spoiler, I love this game.
Yeah.
And what I love about this game is getting to build one of the greatest civilizations. Like, you start at what BC? Like
4,000.
4,000 BC, yeah. And you go all the way past the present.
Yeah, you go all the way to the future.
And you can play as Japan, as the United States, as Brazil, as Egypt.
Greece,
Norway, Rome. Just so many fun options. And you get to build one of the greatest empires.
And they're all unique. They all have their own
and
unique abilities.
And they have the advantages and disadvantages. Yeah. So I kind of wanted to... I couldn't research all of the empires that are in Civ in 10 minutes. Yeah. I mean, I guess I could, but that would be...
1 minute on each on
not
each
even, like 30 seconds on each one. But what I kind of could do was trace the life cycle of an empire. Since some of these empires might be at their peak now, some would argue, and some are definitely declined.
Some of them aren't even around anymore.
Exactly. And I looked at a lot of different theories, and I found this gentleman named Sir John Glubb, or Glubb Pasha, as he was better known. And he basically had the most concise, best laid out theory. So my disclaimer is that this is a theory.
Okay.
This isn't necessarily proven fact, and I don't agree with all of it, me myself, but I found it very interesting what he said and how it kind of does mirror a lot of great civilizations.
Yeah.
And it also mirrors what a lot of other historians say, you know, give or take some. So
makes a great civilization or makes a civilization fall?
What makes a civilization rise and what makes a civilization fall.
Okay, cool.
So Sir John Glubb was a British gentleman. He served in France in World War I. And then left the army to serve in the Iraqi government, and he commanded the famous Arab Legion. He then went on to become a scholar of sorts, wrote a bunch of books about the Middle East and the Arab countries. And he also wrote this essay called The Fate of Empires. And in the essay, he says that different empires have similar cultural changes while experiencing a life cycle in a series that could overlap.
Okay.
A series of stages that could overlap, I should say. And he defines an empire as a great superpower. So for its time, it is probably the greatest superpower is how he does this.
Okay.
And he believes that historians were dominated by emotion. So they were prejudiced because they really liked Rome in this period. But maybe they liked it so much that they didn't notice that there were elements that led to its decline in this golden age. And he felt that historians needed to focus on, like, the full cycle as and look at different empires as well to see patterns.
Yeah, Western historians definitely have, like, a
fixation. The empires that he focused on in this piece were Assyria, Persia, Greece, starting with Alexander the Great, the Roman Republic, and then the Roman Empire. The Roman Republic, he states, ends with Augustus Caesar. The Arab Empire, the Mamluk Empire, which I actually hadn't really read a lot about, but it was the greatest Islamic empire of the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
The Ottoman Empire, Spain, Romanov Russia, and the British Empire. So, again, to disclaim, there are no Asian empires in this. He lived in the Middle East, and he was from Britain, so he really focused in that area.
Yeah, he's very Western-focused.
Yeah, and Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
That's not Western, right? Not considered Western.
No, but Europe did have many more dealings with the Middle East for a lot
yeah,
longer
than it was
they did
right
with
there.
China. Yeah.
Saved them from a lot of invasions, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And he, Glubb, states that despite vast differences in size and level of technology— the empires have one thing in common, and that's that they last about 10 generations or 200 to 300 years, according to him.
Oh, wow.
So, again, just a theory. And if you disagree with me, which I'm sure some people will, you can let me know and we'll discuss. And I might agree with you.
Yeah.
So he breaks it down into seven ages. The first stage is the Age of Outburst, or the Pioneers. It's a sudden breakout. Obscure, poor, unpromising-looking people achieve independence, and they begin autonomous development. Sometimes this is because of one charismatic leader. And these people display enormous amounts of energy, ingenuity, and courage. So an example that he gave is that the Arabs ruled Spain for a long time. And there was no Spanish nation, just small kings. But 50 years after the last Arabs were expelled from Granada in southern Spain, Cortez had conquered Mexico, and Spain was the greatest empire in the world.
They were these super rich.
These people know, yeah. These people, we learned that in an earlier episode, arrival episode.
Yeah.
So these people no one really saw coming all of a sudden united and managed to become a great empire.
That's like the America during the antebellum period before the Civil War was like people thought America was going to have no population. It was going to be kind of a crappy country, but it had this huge population boom and this big push west expanding its borders.
Right, which the Age of Conquest would be the next stage. So the empire becomes a force to be reckoned with in its region. Energy and courage of the people continue, and the civilization develops its identity, and it develops organization and discipline. It has unquestioned loyalty from its people, and they're confident and optimistic. And he says there can be bumps along the way. And it's also experimental in government and warfare because it isn't yet tied to a certain tradition.
Yeah.
So Rome's expansion, we can say, would be the Age of Conquest.
Okay.
And then there's the Age of Commerce. So conquest of land acts as a stimulant to commerce. The Roman Empire, as I said, extended from Britain to Egypt. So you could trade all throughout there
in Rome. Yeah, and they went from Spain to Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Land has been homesteaded, resources have been developed, and there's trade routes set all around the country. Money is invested in communications and highways, bridges, roads, infrastructure, basically.
Yeah.
And the first half of this age appears to be splendid. Ancient virtues, the courage, and the national pride are still evident.
Yeah.
It's marked by great enterprise and great exploration for new forms of wealth. So, like, the British and the Spanish off exploring the world.
Gallivanting in the Far East.
And the Americas.
Doing and in the Americas.
Right. And it's a single administration and culture which allows commerce to grow in an environment of stability. But he also says this is where the first signs of trouble appear because the children of the pioneers make money and their alliance shifts from an alliance to the state to an alliance to money.
Yeah, it's like the, it's not exactly like this. I was thinking of the first Rockefeller who made all the money and then his kids just being rich and having all that.
And some blogs I read, that was what this age was compared to.
Yeah.
Well, next we get to the age of affluence, which can kind of tie in with the age of commerce. Money causes decline is Glubb's theory.
Makes you soft.
Yeah, basically that's his theory, but it's gradual. It replaces honor and silences duty. The affluence affects most people, and those at the core commercial class grow rich. They endow universities, create foundations that are tax exempt to hide their money from the tax man. And now wealth is used for extra market purposes that may or may not better the nation. The empire, I know, the empire becomes more defensive minded. And they're not as interested in conquest. And Glubb seems to think this is a weakness and a sign of the weakening of the people.
Oh, since you don't want to conquest anymore?
You just want to defend. Okay. Yes, because your people are soft.
Because you're hoarding all your cash.
Yes. And also, this is when around now is when the civilization reaches its high noon moment of confidence. This is where the nation's wealth dazzles other nations. Ancient values of patriotism and courage survive enough so it will defend its frontiers, but greed is replacing duty. He claims that the reign of Queen Victoria in England would be around like the high noon time.
Oh, really? And he was writing right after World War One.
He wrote this in 1970s.
Okay.
So he had some time.
So he had some time.
The next stage is the age of intellect. This thrives because most citizens' needs are now satisfied and the middle class has time to think. There are surprising advances in science. An example, in the 9th century, the Arabs measured the circumference of the earth almost close to perfect.
You know what else they did in the 9th century? Or it might have been the 10th, actually. The Arabs, they essentially discovered zero.
Oh.
Zero was not a thing until the Arab Empire.
See, surprising advances in science.
It insanely advanced algebra.
Yeah. I have read about their math.
Yeah.
The medieval Arabians.
Yeah.
But he says that intellectuals become political servants to grants, and the constant discussion seems to destroy the power of action.
Oh, everyone's debating everything, so nothing's getting done.
Yes. And this is also a stage where there's an intensification of internal political hatreds.
Oh, God.
There is an influx of foreigners, and he does say the foreigners aren't necessarily lesser people, but they create differences that tend to introduce cracks and divisions within the country.
Oh, so the country's not this one united nationalistic bulk anymore.
Yeah.
Because
he talks about how many foreigners were in Rome at the end of its time.
They kept conquering foreigners. You think the Germans wanted to be foreigners?
Anyway,
yeah.
But that aside, and then there's the age of decadence. There's pessimism, withdrawal of the citizens into their own private affairs, and increased frivolity among the masses.
The Kardashians, I gotcha.
So an example that besides the Kardashians is that in the Byzantine Empire, there were these rivalries between the green and blue teams in the Hippodrome, and they were such a big deal that they caused bloody riots. The heroes of this nation are now athletes and singers as opposed to leaders.
Oh, God.
And I don't agree with this. An increase in the influence of women in public life.
That's one of his declines. Yeah.
No, decadence.
Oh, that's part of the decadence?
Age of decadence.
Once you give the women any power and say.
It's over. Well, America hasn't done that yet. And and then there is 7, which is the age of decline and collapse, which he says can happen in many different ways. Some empires are just wiped off by an enemy. Some slowly fade away and replaced by a greater empire. It depends.
Yeah, and some are torn apart from the inside.
And he says that all empires believe that their nations will rule forever. And again, I'm restating, I don't agree with everything he says, but I thought this was really fascinating, really scary, and to research. And you can definitely go down some dark holes researching this.
Yeah.
And I wanted to conclude my segment with a quote. The further backward you can look, the further forward you are likely to see. And that's Winston Churchill.
This is why history is really important as something to study, I think, is because exactly something like this, which, of course, I don't agree that women lead to the collapse of empires. But just
not women. It's just women in public life.
That's sure, of course, it is. But just that when you look at how Americans, I feel like right now think that, you know, we're the greatest nation on earth. Well, Romans thought that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the British thought that.
The Assyrians thought that. And maybe they were, but they weren't forever.
Yeah.
And it's like, when does it start to go down? I don't know. It's a little scary.
This is a whole podcast.
Yeah.
But we should talk now about the reason I did all this research, Civ 6, which you get to build an empire that doesn't collapse.
You don't have to let women in your empire at all if you don't want.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Good luck increasing your population.
That's very true. No, but in Civilization 6, you don't have to follow these rules. Mm-mm. Unlike
it lasts
debatably
more than
300 life.
Years.
Yeah. And it goes from 4000 BC to the future.
Mm-hmm. Unless you get killed.
Pretty epic. All right. Yeah. Let me get into this. Let me get into the game Civilization. Claire, I think your segment is really cool. But let's talk about something lighter and happier, shall we? All right. Instead of the potential future of America.
It's not what we were talking about, Kyle.
That's what I was thinking about. So I want to start off this segment talking about 4X games, because Civilization is a 4X game. I don't remember if I mentioned this in the beginning, but 4X is a type of game, and I want to just elaborate more on what that is. So 4X is a genre of strategy-based video game. The X's in 4X stand for explore, expand, exploit, and exterminate.
Ooh.
So these are all aspects of 4X games. And if you've ever played Civilization or you're curious about Civilization, those are all big points in
it. What are other 4X games? Maybe famous ones.
Age of Empires is a 4X mm-hmm. game. Normally 4X games are turn-based, but there are some real-time strategy, mm-hmm. Age of Empires being one of them. The term 4X was originally coined by Alan Emmerich in regards to his game Master of Orion. It came out in 1993, and it was actually a joke where he was trying to like play up how good his game was about, you know, it's like it doesn't have a XXX rating, you know, like that kind of snuff, smut stuff. It's 4X. It's so cool.
I like that joke.
Yeah. So 4X games are noted for their deep and complex gameplay. You know, you really get into the meat of things, and there's a lot of different options in your game. They normally feature, but are not entirely focused on military conquest, but you normally can do trade and resources and diplomacy. And they were largely pulled from board games of the 70s.
That makes sense. Civ was kind of pulled. We talked about, I thought it was pulled from a board game, and you say it's kind of pulled
the
from
Civilization,
a board game.
The one of the guys who worked on the first Civilization used to work at that board game company. But it's very different. That board game goes from, I think, 10,000 BC to 250 BC.
Okay.
It doesn't span a whole civilization.
Yeah, but you would need so much space on a board.
Yeah, this is true. So there were a lot of 4X games that came out in the early and mid-90s. Though by the mid-90s, most were being outsold by other kinds of games. Many were not that successful, with one really notable exception, and that's the Civilization franchise. Was hugely successful from the beginning.
I was playing 4X games in the 90s.
They were big. They had kind of a heyday. And I mean, when we say big, it's games for being big in the early 90s, which video games weren't really on that many people's radars anyway. But they weren't outselling the race car games.
Right.
You know, or the fighting
Crash
games.
Crash Bandicoot
yeah,
games.
Yeah, stuff
Mario.
Like that.
Mario, yeah.
So Civilization was one of the big notable exceptions to that. And I want to talk about the guy whose name adorns all the Civilization computer games, and that's Sid Meier. So Sidney Meier was born in Canada, but he moved to Michigan as a young child, and he has a degree in computer science from the University of Michigan. And Meier was making video games as a hobby while he worked as a programmer for a company called General Instruments.
Okay.
And it was at General Instruments in 1982 that he met a man named Bill Steely. So Bill Steely was this old Air Force pilot that worked at General Instruments, and he was in the U.S. Air Force Reserve. And they met at a company party, and Steely was telling these like awesome, cool fighter pilot stories to the people at the party. And Sid Meier was one of the people there, and he was like, oh, that's weird. I'm actually working on a flight simulator game. I'm trying to make myself on my old Atari 800. I mean, not old Atari 800, because at that time it was very new. But just because he made video games as a hobby. And Steely was like, oh, you're trying to make a flight simulator? that sounds really, really cool. He was so jazzed by this idea that he was like, went to Meyer and was like, look, let's make a video game company. I'll be the president and head the company and cover the marketing, and you just do all that nerd stuff. You make the games, and we'll make all these flight simulator games, and it'll be amazing. And Sid Meier was like, yeah, that sounds great. He's always wanted to work on video games. And so they went into business together, and they founded the company Microprose Software in 1982.
Sounds like how our podcast was formed.
That's exactly how our podcast was
formed. We won't say who the president is and who the nerd is.
I was going to say, who's the nerd and who does all the legwork and who's the happy, smiling face of this podcast? It's James. He's both. So Microprose, they pretty much only made flight simulator games. And at first, Sid Meier was cool with this, but then he wanted to start making other games and, like, branch out. And it was at Microprose he met Bruce Campbell Shelley, who had worked for Avalon Hill.
These guys have great names.
Yeah, they do have great names. Very pronounceable names, which I like about this. Good American names. But Shelley worked at Avalon Hill, which was a board game company that made the Civilization board game. And both him and Meyer, like, they weren't super jazzed about working on all these flight simulators. They wanted to do something a little different. And Meyer had the idea for doing a Civilization computer game. Now, Steely, the president of the company, wasn't really jazzed about Meyer doing really anything other than flight simulators, but he did start this company with Meyer, so he was like, all right, you just, I guess, and in your spare time, you can work on whatever
you want. So he keeps on making video games in his spare time.
Yeah, yeah. Meyer and Shelley began working on Civilization in 1990, and Meyer would code and make a really stripped down version of the game, give it to Shelley. Shelley would play it, and Shelley would give feedback about what was and wasn't working, like what he liked and didn't like. And this is where you can say that the Civilization board game did affect the creation of the first Civilization computer game.
I also thought that Meyer based it on Risk.
I read a really funny, quote-unquote, recipe for Civilization, and Meyer did base it partially on Risk, but this recipe, quote-unquote, for Civilization was 3 parts Risk, 2 parts SimCity, 1 part Railroad Tycoon, and a heaping teaspoon of Sid Meier's design genius, with stir in a little Bruce Shelley for taste, and you get Civilization.
Sounds delicious.
It sounds delicious. And that was from a Game of Sutra piece written by Benj Edwards. So Sid and Shelley experimented with Civilization 1 for a while. Sid would code it, send it to Shelley. Shelley would tell what he did and didn't like. They tried doing it in real time, which is where everything's just happening at once, but then they decided the turns was best. Originally, the map was so big, apparently, that it would take, like, forever for your units, your people, to kind of get across the map and for you to discover other civilizations, so they made that smaller. And they were also fooling with having less of a military capacity, but then they realized that a lot of the fun is just...
That some people just want to conquer.
We just want to conquer! But the core foundations of the first game were there, and they still exist in every subsequent game of fostering a civilization from infancy and just expanding in ways that civilization might never have expanded. Like, what if you're Japan and you're placed inland? How would that Japan function, you know? Which is really cool. The historiosity being a huge part of the Civilization franchise, I feel like you got to mention some of this. On that first game, Meyer wrote the leader and civilization bios based on his already existing knowledge. He just knew this stuff about history.
Whoa.
And the same goes with the technology tree. He did the technology tree on stuff he just already knew.
And the technology tree is basically like you get to research certain technologies and it advances.
Yeah.
The technologies get more and more advanced as you progress. Like, you'll start with the wheel, and eventually you get to mathematics, and then eventually you get to rocket science.
And that's something that Meyer was very adamant about when he was creating this game, is not overwhelming someone with too much information, and the tech tree was something he created to help with that. That, like, you start off slow. You start off just learning the wheel, or writing.
Or pottery.
And that's how the game kind of slowly indoctrinates you into it, where you start off small. And as the game progresses and gets more and more complex, it's kind of tapered so you can deal with it better.
You know what? I take that for granted. But that is a really cool part of the game.
Yeah, and it's something that's stayed true throughout all six civilizations. Now, Meyer, like I said, wrote the Civ bios, and he did this all based on all his existing knowledge of history. Shelley wrote the entire Civilopedia for the first game.
What's the Civilopedia?
You know the Civilopedia in Civilization? It's where you can look up every unit and
oh,
every
yeah.
building.
Wait, he didn't write that from memory, though, did he?
No, I don't. It didn't say. I don't think he could have. But the book, the booklet was 300 pages long for
My
the
goodness.
Civilopedia.
What nerds.
They're such nerds. And Meyer says that the kind of key to the Civ franchise in developing the next game in the series, they used what they call a rule of thirds, where they keep one third of the game the same, one third of the game is new, is brand new stuff, and one third of the game is stuff that was in the original or in the one before it, but is tweaked slightly.
Mm-hmm. So you keep people... Could they come back for that old thrill, but you get them wanting more.
Yeah, exactly. It helps the game maintain a familiar yet new and enjoyable experience from game to game. That's why, like, we played a lot of Civ 5, now we're playing a lot of Civ 6. Civ 6 is a different game, but it's familiar enough that we can play it and still enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's still new. So the Civilization games have been extremely successful. Civilization 4 was rated by IGN as the number two game ever created. So
just what was number one?
I'm not sure, actually. I wonder what beat it out. But I want to talk about something that's in all the Civilization games as well, other than, you know, exploring and meeting new civilizations and building your civilization from the ground up. And it's the Gandhi glitch. So if you've ever played a Civ game, you know that Gandhi is a huge nuke-loving a-hole.
Gandhi's the leader of India.
Gandhi is the leader of India and Civilization. And obviously, this is very different from the historical Gandhi. Mm-hmm. And Civilization really does do a good job trying to make the leaders, like, historically accurate. Except they seem to have really messed up Gandhi. Well, it turns out that this was a bug in the first Civ game that the developers have included
that
in
Gandhi
subsequent.
Was a nuclear-loving app.
That the Civ developers have put it in every other Civ game as kind of an Easter egg. So in the first Civ game, all the leaders they were rated on a scale of on an aggression scale when they were coded.
Okay.
Gandhi was rated as a 1 in aggression.
Okay.
Obviously. Now, what the bug was that is when an AI civilization would discover democracy, your aggression score would go down by 2. So that AI civilization would be less aggressive. Since Gandhi was a 1 and there's no -1 in the coding,
oh my God,
instead
so
of going
bad.
Down to -1, he went from a 1 aggression before discovering democracy to a 255 level of aggression after discovering democracy.
That's so funny.
And that's why in the first game, Gandhi, once he got nukes, all of a sudden was just this huge jerk and was just nuking cities left and right. And every developer of Civ has loved that so much as just this funny thing that, you know, even though the games have changed and they don't use that same aggression scale, they're like, no, we make sure that when Gandhi gets nukes, he goes bananas.
I mean, Gandhi was never in control of the nukes, but
so
maybe
you never know.
Would have happened that way in real life.
Maybe. No more peaceful protesters for you, British. Gandhi's coming back with a vengeance.
The decline. What did I say?
The decadent decline.
Yeah.
So that's my production segment on Civilization 6 and just the franchise in general. There's a lot you can talk about. Obviously, the games have been very successful and they did change frequently and majorly throughout their lives, but it just seemed like too big to cover. I wanted to talk about the first and about Sid himself. And Sid's still alive. He's a happy nerd who...
He's made a lot of money.
He's very humble, though. He doesn't seem like he's made a lot of money in interviews. He doesn't dress like he's made a lot of money.
It's mean.
I'm just saying. And I think, Claire, what do you think about Civilization, the franchise, Civilization 6 in specific?
So, if you couldn't have gathered from earlier, I love this game. It's my comfort food.
Just look at her Steam profile.
Don't look at my Steam profile. It's like the profile of shame, because it shows how much of the game I played. And Steam is the platform that I play the game on my computer. But it shows all of my friends and anyone who looks me up. How many hours of Civ?
How many hours of Civ 5 do you have, Claire?
I think it's like 380 or something.
380?
Yeah. Well, yours is not that far off.
Yeah, mine's not that far off.
I think you're actually ahead of me.
Am I? I introduced this game to you.
Yeah. But I feel like this game is one of the reasons we wanted to do this podcast.
Yeah, it was. It definitely
was. We're like,
was.
Well, Civ 6 is coming up. We can do a podcast about that.
Yeah. No, that's true. I freaking love this game and the series. Although, I've only played Civ 1, Civ 5, and Civ 6.
Yeah, I've only played Civ 5 and Civ 6. But my favorite games growing up were these 4X games.
Yeah, these expansion games.
I used to play this game called Rome and Caesar, which you were building the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
And the, what was the, no, it was Greece or?
Greece?
Athens, something like that. Oh, Zeus.
Yeah, it was Zeus.
I used to play Zeus a lot too.
My big game that I played Civ 1 as a kid at my grandma's house because she had a computer for it. But the game I played as like a middle schooler, elementary schooler was Age of Empires, which is another 4X game.
My brother used to play that all the time.
And Bruce Shelley, who built the first, who worked with Sid Meier on the first Civ game, created Age of Empires.
So all in the family.
All in the family. Yeah. But yeah, it's just a great game.
What's your favorite thing about it?
My favorite thing about Civilization, and this is going to sound a little weird, is like almost this wish fulfillment thing.
That you get to conquer the world?
Even beyond. So this is going to sound very strange. My grandmother's Polish.
We're admitting our darkest secrets here. My Steam profile hours and Kyle's deepest wish.
My grandmother's Polish, and I'm a quarter Polish. It's not even that Polish. But in Civ 5, I loved to play as Poland and set up games where I would play against Russia and Germany and Austria. And just crush them.
Like, that's such a nerdy thing, Kyle.
It was like me getting back after, because I'd read all these books on Polish history and like, oh, the Russians shafted Poland and the Germans shafted them too. And Austria did it too. And it's like, it was me getting back at them.
I just like building wonders.
It was a catharsis. Yeah, that's another cool aspect of the game.
You get to build like the Eiffel Tower, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon.
Yeah.
All throughout the ages, there's different wonders. I don't even really like going to war. I get nervous.
I love it.
I know you do.
I'm like a little Saddam Hussein when I play Civ. It's pathetic.
Kyle's Empire. Yeah. Just Iraq in the 90s.
Yeah, it's boring.
Because
Claire plays it the way it should be played.
Just wonder after, maybe not. I just have all this cultural decadence.
Yeah,
that I'm not expanding my borders. But I it's this funny thing where I have played more Civ 6 than Kyle has, maybe because of a little game called Overwatch.
Overwatch.
But
yeah.
So while Overwatch is being played, I'm playing Civ 6.
Yeah, that's true.
But I haven't gone to war once, and Kyle's already conquered all of his map.
Oh, my first Civ 6 game. I picked Norway. I built a boatload of berserkers, and I just crushed China.
I'm playing as Gandhi.
You're playing as Gandhi?
Yeah, and we're just like chilling out. We haven't discovered democracy yet.
You better keep to the Gandhi tradition and go nuke crazy.
Yeah, maybe at the end I'll go war crazy.
No, you definitely should, Claire.
This game is like for history nerds. I feel like it's just
if you're a history nerd, it's
crack. Because you get to do all these cool things, and they have, like, we talked about the Civipedia, where you can look up whatever, like, you can,
every single unit and every single building and every single person that appears in that game, there's a bio on them.
Yeah, it's just, it's so cool. And then playing, and all the different strengths, the different countries, like Poland in Civ 5, it's not, Poland's not in Civ 6 yet, has the Winged Hussar as its special unit.
And it's so powerful.
Yeah.
It's a cavalry unit that really existed, that was something that came out of Poland.
Yeah.
You know, those unique to that civilization. That's another thing, is all these civilizations have their own flavor, and it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you can listen to that civilization's music when you're playing them.
Yeah.
The music is that civilization. Oh, it's so cool.
The depths of the game are almost unfathomable.
Yeah. And Sean Bean is narrating Civ 6, and he's quite good.
Yeah.
I have to say.
Another thing I think which is really cool about Civ, and this is just throughout the series, is the great people. So in the civilization games, you can get great people. Like, if you put enough work into science. A great scientist will appear in your civilization, and it'll be an actual scientist
with a Civipedia,
with the bio. Yeah, you know, they're like, I'll get this great scientist, and it's this Chinese name I've never heard of, or an Indian name I've never heard of, and I'll look at him and be like, oh, this guy calculated the circumference of the Earth in 200 BC.
That's how I knew the Arabs had discovered the circumference of the globe in the 9th century originally,
because of a great scientist.
Yeah, because of a great scientist.
And the fact that you don't, it's not just a blood and guts conquer game. Like, mm-mm. that's not the only way I play it, because I'm
trying to get my other girlfriends to play it with me. They don't seem to be taking the bait. I'm like, no, but it's a smart game,
and we
can play online together. It'll be so much fun, ladies.
Sid Meier's in interviews that people have asked him about the how addicting it is, and like if he's ever felt that, and he's like, oh yeah, there's definitely this, and he chalks it up to when you're in this game that can last so long and it's a world so big, you start thinking about your future moves. Not your immediate moves. Like, if you're in a first-person shooter game like Overwatch, which we did a podcast on, you're thinking, like, you're reacting. You're thinking of the moment. You're not really thinking that far into the future. Where in Civ, I know that I've been in Civ games where I've been at work thinking, like, all right, so my next thing is I'm going to try and establish a base on this continent to do this. You have so many long-term goals that there's never, like, a good spot to stop.
But that's what makes those 4X games so addicting, like, in general. Like, SimCity. Like,
yeah,
all of those. The Sims,
yeah.
But I guess we can conclude by we love this game.
I think this game.
I think everyone should play it. You can lose your life to it, and I'll feel better about myself
yes.
if everyone else loses their life. After this podcast, I'm probably going to go play Civ.
Yeah. And if you have a girlfriend or boyfriend, just... You don't need them.
No, right? You just get them to play it with you. That's
or you get them
you
to
do.
Play it with you, yeah. And Civ 6 is my girlfriend.
And it's a fun... you can play fun group games, too. Like, we actually tried to coerce our friends into playing a group game as quote-unquote research.
Research. I was telling my girlfriend, like, yeah, baby, it's research, right? We've got to do it.
But it's actually, I really think it is spending time with your friends.
Yeah.
Like, you get to talk. They can be at their house. No one has to move. I'm not a fan of moving. And we all get to talk and interact together.
Yeah. No, it's true. And it is just a lot of fun.
And they can invade you. Do you remember our producer, James? We were playing with some friends, and our friend Ben was going to convert his city.
And James was like, if you convert my city, I consider it an act of war. So there was a game in Civ 5 that myself, Claire, and our producer James played together, and James was becoming too powerful, and I sent this really long conspiratorial email to Claire, be like, all right, we need to team up, and this is what we have to do.
I got that email. I hadn't been playing for very long, and I was like, oh, I'm so overwhelmed.
And I outlined our strategy. I was like, listen, you need to attack him from the sea, and I'm going to invade from the south, and it's really our only chance. So the group aspect of Civilization is a lot
of fun. So much fun. I play with my brother all the time.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
And if you want to feel better about your Steam hours, you should look at my brother's Steam hours. And he doesn't listen to this podcast, so I can shame him.
Yeah, you won't hear it at the dinner table. Anyway, Civilization as a franchise is great. Civ 6 is a really fun game, and it's just cool to get to sample the different flavors of the world.
Yeah, bringing friends and families together.
And tearing them apart. Thank you all so much for listening. Once again, I'm Kyle Willoughby.
And I'm Claire White.
And we are Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, a Nerd Manual. Feel free to contact us on our website at dsrapodcast.com, and we would love it if you could rate and review us on iTunes. You can find the show on Twitter at DSRA Podcast. I can be found on Twitter at Klex303, that's KLEX303.
I can be found at Along With Claire, that's CLAIRE.
And you can find our producer James at James Foey Jr., that's James Foey, FOUHEYJR. You can learn more about Civilization on our Facebook page, where we will be posting some of our show notes. Our producer, who wishes he was Civilization 6 and great American leader Teddy Roosevelt, is James Foey. Our logo was done by Patty Hyland, who I think shares a lot of commonalities with Harald Hardrada, the scourge of the seas and leader of the Viking Norwegians. And our theme was composed by Pete Rowan, who is kind of like Civilization Gandhi, where, you know, he's peaceful, 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 but at the end he's...
He discovers democracy. And then free he
just
speech.
Wants, and then he just wants to nuke you. Once again, this is Dragons, Sexy Robots, and Adventures, a Nerd Manual. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.